Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. In the year 1970, four young musicians from the South Bay of Los Angeles came together to create a new invigorating style of music, exploring the possibilities of progressive, classical, and world influences, yet rooted with the soul of the blues and R&B. Joseph Huerta, Christopher North, David Pack, and Burley Drummond created a new sound that was defined and recognized as Ambrosia. Originally labeled as America's answer to the progressive invasion of such English acts as Yes and King Crimson, the group quickly proved it was all that and much more, as its albums painted oral landscapes covering the gamut of musical styles and attracting the collaboration of such cultural icons as Leonard Bernstein, Kurt Vonnegut Jr., and Alan Parsons. In its brief recording history, Ambrosia garnered 5 Grammy nominations, 5 hit singles, heavy FM airplay, and the admiration and respect of the musical community. All this was in addition to sold-out concerts around the world. Today, the band is more alive and compelling than ever, with 3 of the original members intact, plus the addition of guitar ace Doug Jackson on electric guitar and backing vocals, Mary Harris contributing amazing keyboards and vocals, and the powerful contemporary lead vocals and acoustic guitar of Ken Stacy. Ambrosia is exploring new musical territory and continuing to wow lifelong fans and new converts alike. Please welcome bassist, singer, songwriter, and founding member of rock legends Ambrosia and Bruce Hornsby in the Range, Joe Huerta, to the show. Hello, Joe.
Hello there. Welcome to all.
Yeah. Well, how have you been coping with the isolation and everything? What have you been doing?
Well, I just recently moved. We just recently moved. Recently married. Actually, we were married on the Rock and Romance, the Time Life Rock and Romance cruise.
Really?
Huh. Probably was one of the last cruises to make it to there and back, because it was soon after that that this whole Corona-19 hit, and we were lucky enough to get through that cruise. A lot of the band members that we play with, other bands, I should say, that we play with, were booked on a cruise following our cruise, and that one was canceled. So we probably were the last music cruise to make it out of port.
Yeah, you just
and
made
for us,
it. Yeah.
It was amazing because we had a plan that's a pretty unique and special wedding, which included a lot of our friends. It was sort of a concert/wedding.
Right.
And several of our friends who were also on that cruise, Stephen Bishop, Peter Beckett from Player, and John Ford Coley, who became the host of the event, because as a good old Southern boy, he knows how to talk.
Uh-huh.
And he's very entertaining and funny, and so he was kind of like the overseer of the event. And Burley Drummond has actually married people before, so he was the man who married us, and Christopher North, our longtime bandmate, was the best man. So it was a unique event. Cool.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So you're still on your honeymoon, basically.
Well, do a honeymoon, and then we got back, and both of us had, actually, I had gotten sick just as we left the ship. I started to feel something.
Right.
And then my wife, when she got back, she got something, and we survived it, obviously, but it was, you know, the hacking cough and all the things that, at the time, we didn't know what it was, and of course, as most people haven't been tested, we don't know what it was, but we made it through, and we just recently moved, so we've been working on the property that we got, just clearing brush and being field hands, you know, but we're enjoying
right.
it, getting outside at least. It's been hard work, but fun, keeping us busy.
You know, my wife got sick, too. She had every symptom in the book. And we don't know what it was, but she really struggled for a long time with it. But and again,
the cough.
Yeah, she had the cough. She had the shortness of breath. She got really tired, you know. And it mm-hmm. she had a little bit of everything. And you know, she didn't want to go to the hospital because you know that's where you
can. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's such a. Like you said, it's a very unusual time. We don't know exactly how to react. We're just waiting to see, of course, when things will open up to the point where people want to go congregate and see live events again. You know, we were booked. Actually, our next show that we were booked for was in Florida,
right
at the Epcot Center.
Exactly.
We were booked May 5th, and it's not going to happen probably till next year. They're probably going to postpone everything for a while.
That's a shame. You were going to be there at the American Gardens Theater through May 7th, and then you're headed to Vegas after that, I think.
And everything is postponed so far in May.
In May, okay.
We're waiting to see if the shows, we have some shows here in California, I believe, and maybe elsewhere, and we're waiting to see if any of the June shows will materialize. It's really a day by day.
Right.
You know, it's just hard to know how to plan because you're waiting to see how things open up. We'll watch the news, of course, and today they were saying they're going to start to roll out, certain things in society, and people can get back out and at least go to the park or the beaches or something. You know,
right, right.
Nice to get out of the house.
Exactly. Well, you're going to be back in Florida in June, on June 14th, at Gulfstream Park, Hallandale Beach. So there's one we might be able to see yet.
Exactly. Maybe we will.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. No one's ever been through this, so everybody's trying to figure it out as we go. Yeah.
It's crazy. It really is. Like you said, it's a sci-fi movie or the Twilight Zone.
Yep.
You guys started out, and the music-wise, you guys are very eclectic. You can play just about anything, but I like your R&B stuff. You know, How Much I Feel,
okay.
And I love Holding On to Yesterday was probably one of my favorite songs of all time.
Great.
That's a great song. And your first album was a huge hit. Where did they get the idea that you guys would be probably the next Yes or King Crimson as far as prog? Where did that start?
Well, we were always, and initially we were very much influenced by the English prog bands.
Right.
We went to see, the thing that blew our mind when we were first starting off, the band was really influenced a lot by the California, I would say more like groups like Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge fan of guys like Jackson Browne, the singer, songwriter, folk guys.
Yep.
And we had a lot of songs that were more in that realm of the country-ish rock kind of thing. Holden and I just started off a little bit more in that style. And then we chose to take it into a more of a kind of, I call it almost a mystical blues.
Yeah.
It's got this ethereal quality to it that was added greatly by the mixing of Alan Parsons. When we brought Alan Parsons in to mix the first album, his sonic landscape, you know, soundscapes that he creates,
mm-hmm.
made that song almost, you know, it has a dreamy quality to it, I think, that it's a soulfulness along with a ethereal dreaminess to it that kind of made it really
Oh, yeah. He guy's a genius. He really is.
He is. You know, he's quite an amazing. And he also became a great songwriter. You know, he wrote some great songs. He and his partner, Eric Wilson, yeah.
You guys, didn't you play on Alan Parsons' album as well? A lot of the guys in the band?
We did. Yeah. How that developed, after Alan came over to mix our first album, we had already recorded everything, but he came over just as the mixer. And then we loved working with him so much, we asked him if he would come and produce our next album, mm-hmm. which he agreed to do. So the Some I've Never Traveled album, Alan Parsons is the producer on, and he at the same time, he and his manager approached the same record company we were working with, 20th Century Records, with this idea of an album that the star would be the producer of the Alan Parsons project.
Right.
And that idea was, you know, agreed to by the president of our company, a guy named Russ Regan. And the first track, after he was working with us on our album, he asked us to cut a track to this new album he was making. And it was so secretive, and it was just the Alan Parsons project, that's all we knew. We didn't know what the song was about, even. They came into the studio to cut the track, mm-hmm. not do the vocals, just the track.
Right.
And Eric sat down at the piano and said, well, how's the song go? And he just sat down at the piano and started going, boom, 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 boom. One note, over and over again. He did this like for 2 minutes straight. And we're thinking, is this a joke? I didn't even know it was that. But then he started adding, dum, 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 the little chordal thing mm-hmm. that goes with it, boom, boom. And so we said, oh, okay. And then they kind of filled out how the rest of the song went. But why he did the 2 minute dump, dump with nothing. They didn't tell us there was going to be a big orchestra doing all these things and a big build. And they had, you know, they were going to throw all kinds of things in there. But he took it very literally. How's it go? Okay, he goes, 2 minutes is going to be a 3 minute introduction and this one, no, by you guys. So anyway, we said, well, what's the song? I asked, what's this song about? To get an idea of the feel of the track. And he said, it's called The Raver. Raver? I said, what is a raver? It's like a streetwalker. You know?
Okay.
Oh. I said, well, shouldn't it have maybe a little more bump and grind to it if it's about a streetwalker?
Right. About, makes sense.
Line? I said, how about do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- So anyway, after this long introduction, when it kicks into a song, it gradually goes to that doo-doo-doo-bum-ba-bum, which actually, they ended up grabbing that little bass theme and using it for one of their songs on the next album, I think. I Break Down, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo- that was the first Alan Parsons Project song that was ever cut. We cut it here out in L.A. And then they went back and they did most of it out in England, yeah.
You know, I love the hits. Yeah, I was a DJ, top 40 guy back in the late 70s, so of course I played all your stuff on the air. But, you know, the early stuff, you know, there's so much good music out there. Like I said, you guys are eclectic when it comes to music. You can do just about anything. But some of the songs, like you were mentioning Alan Parsons, Nice, Nice, Very Nice, you know, mm-hmm. another
great
tune.
You mentioned in our introduction about the band, our connection with some amazing people that we somehow got to be hooked up with, and one of them was Kurt Vonnegut Jr., who was
amazing.
You know, one of the great writers in the 20th century, and he had written a book called Cat's Cradle.
Right.
And while we were recording our first album, we had a song that we had pretty much developed in many different ways, but the producer of the record didn't like the lyrics, and so we started thinking, well, how are we going to change the lyrics?
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the book Cat's Cradle, and in this book there's these they call them calypso. Amon used to write these calypsos, these old lines, and one of them was called Nice, Nice, Very Nice. Or Sleeping Drunkard in Central Park, Lion Hunter in the Jungle Dark, Chinese Dentist, British Queen, all fit together in the same machine. Nice, Nice, Very Nice. Mm-hmm. So many people in the same device. And I thought, you know what, I think those words could fit into music. So I brought the book to our rehearsal hall and started singing along with the track we had created. And then the Nice, Nice, Very Nice, I said, let's just pop this chorus in here with the Nice, Nice, Very Nice. And it just worked. And so we went ahead, adapted his lyrics into the first verse, and then I wrote accompanying lyrics to kind of go along with it, with the idea that he had written. So I got to co-write lyrics with Kurt Vonnegut.
That's amazing.
Without being in the same room, of course. so we went ahead, we recorded the track, we brought out Alan Parsons from England, mixed the whole album. And after everything was all mixed and ready to go, we realized, you know what? I think we need legal permission from Kurt to use this lyric. So after all this work, it could have been like deboshed by Kurt saying,
right,
I don't like it. You know, we don't know how he's going to react. So anyway, we had to get a hold of him, send him a song, and he loved it. He loved it. He just thought it was great. So he gave us permission. So thankfully, because we didn't have to remix the album or change the lyrics, really. And the album came out. The song was actually kind of a hit along the East Coast, mm-hmm. New York especially, was pretty popular. So he always thought it was a bigger hit maybe than it was, because it was a regional hit, not a national hit. But
right.
It was very popular in the East Coast, where he was living in New York City. So he wrote us a fabulous letter, and at the end of the letter to us, thanking us for how lucky he was to be associated with us, he said, there's one thing I've always known, that music is the only art worth a damn. I envy you guys. Can you imagine that, getting a letter when we were, you know, growing up, being awed by his writing and stuff? It was just unbelievable.
That's awesome. So, that's a great story. Great story. You know, there's like a couple of different groups for Ambrosia lovers. You know, there's a big group that likes your early stuff, and there's of course a group that likes the hits, and that more of a R&B, you know, kind of feel to it. And some of the early songs,
they call that yacht rock now.
Yacht rock,
be technical.
Yeah, you know, by the way, I had all those guys on my show, you know, from the you were mentioning that were in your wedding. All the guys were...
Stephen Bishop?
Stephen Bishop was on the show.
John Ford Coley?
John Ford Coley and Peter Beckett.
Peter Beckett?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, we call them the captains of yacht rock.
The captains of yacht rock.
they do get a lot of play on the, especially on the yacht rock channel, which is out there right now.
Yeah, they're great guys, all of them. They're really good guys.
They are.
Yeah.
Good friend.
But some of the early stuff, like, you know, Waits for No One, that, you know, from, I guess that was in 1975, maybe. Time Makes Us All Aware, Lover Arrive. I mean, great songs. One of my favorite songs, Drink of Water, Make Us All Aware, Lover Arrive. Life Beyond L.A. is a cool song.
There's a lot of those songs, we still do in concert. And
really?
We definitely get different people coming up saying they're you know, fans of Drink of Water. There's something about Drink of Water that just takes them to a certain place that it really impacted them. One of my favorites you mentioned is Make Us All Aware.
Mm-hmm.
That's one where we combine elements of the prog side of the band is in there, as well as vocally in the harmonies. We were actually inspired by the Beach Boys, some of the stuff they used, their harmonies. We did a lot of stuff with our harmonies on that song, and that was always challenging and fun stuff to do, you know. And we just always were trying to push the envelope, you know, see where we could go with it.
Sure.
We didn't want to have any... I think we always looked to the Beatles as the band that had no boundaries on where they would go musically. And we just took that as our kind of inspiration. And worked under
I had an interview before you. I interviewed Don Denneman from The Circle. You remember The Circle?
Mm-hmm.
Red Rubber Ball, Turn Down Day. You know, they toured with the Beatles. So,
oh my gosh. That must have been crazy times.
Crazy times. And their manager was Epstein, the Beatles manager.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were they English or American?
They were American. I always thought they were British, but they're the only American group that Brian Epstein signed. Everybody else was like the Moody Blues and Jerry and the Pacemakers and things like that.
I actually always thought they were American. And I don't know if you know, you probably know, but Red Rubber Ball was written by Paul Simon.
Paul Simon, that's right.
Yeah. Which before, maybe he got his first hit with them, I'm not sure. First bigger hit.
They actually, I think, toured with Simon and Garfunkel, too, for a little while. And they had a couple of songs from Paul Simon that he contributed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, some of your hits, I just, you know, there are certain standards in top 40 world that it just blows me away that, you know, like how much I feel, you know, I think, you know, I put that in the group like Baby Come Back, you know, from Player. It's, you know, it's that song you remember for the rest of your life, you know. How do you guys make a hit like that? It's just, did you know that it was going to be a big hit, or you just kind of, how did that all come about?
Oh yeah, I think as soon as we heard the demo of the tune, we used to do demos of the song, different
right.
songs, to show the group and try to pick which ones we wanted for the record. And that one was kind of like, oh geez, this is a hit. This is you can't you know, deny the certain songs that you hear that biggest part of me, how much I feel. Those two, which were two of the biggest hits, when we heard just the demos of the songs, we knew that this is going to be big. Yeah, you something you just have a great feel about. And then some later on in history, when I joined Bruce Hornsby's band,
yes.
The Range.
Oh yeah.
When he did a demo of the song "The Way It Is,"
yep,
it was totally out of what was being played on the radio at the
mm-hmm.
time. Nobody was doing these piano solos, and the whole it was such a different kind of song. But when I heard it, I said, I think I told Bruce, I think that could be a hit. And it was like a number one record. It was it took over the airways. It just and it's amazing how people can get into a certain style of music for a while, but then after a while, I think they kind of hunger for a change. And I think when Bruce happened to come along, it was just the timing was right. It just people were ready to hear something different. And it was kind of like what was really big then was the bands out of England, the Haircut 100, and the,
yeah.
you know, all those kind of bands.
Right.
And suddenly this sound came out that was very, very musical and very, you know, it was not progressive music. He combines elements of jazz and country and mm-hmm. bluegrass, and guys like Leon Russell were big inspirations to him. So he combines all these elements into what he does, and he broke the mold when that song came out.
It's really cool how everything worked out, though. You know, Bruce was in your band, in Ambrosia, and then you hook up with Bruce, and then you create more hits with him. You know, it worked out great.
It couldn't have been better. I mean, you know, you hope to have one group that you have a success with, but to have, you know, two different bands,
amazing,
you know, to go on, and it was very special for me. Yeah, and it was a great run with Bruce. It was like 7 years that I played with him, and it was like those were amazing times, some really amazing times, because we went from, you know, playing little clubs in L.A. trying to get signed
right.
to winning the Grammy for Best New Group.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, besides The Way It Is, you know, he did Mandolin Rain, The Show Goes On, The Valley Road, you know, a lot of great
songs.
Yeah.
Across the River was another big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. a lot of hits in his portfolio. So he wrote other songs for people that were hits too. Mm-hmm. Of course,
yep.
He wrote "End of the Innocents" with Don Henley,
right?
Which was a massive hit. "Jacob's Ladder" for Huey Lewis was a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he's one of a kind. I mean, he's probably the most advanced keyboard player that I know of, and rock that combines pop and rock and everything else. And it is, yeah, he's definitely an amazing artist to see. If you ever have a chance to see him solo, is really interesting, because he'll go through every style of music that he has been influenced by, and it goes from 20th century classical music to bluegrass, to Leon Russell, to his own compositions. It's a great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
Haven't had a chance yet to see Bruce, but next time he's around, I'll definitely see him. Definitely catch a show. You also played with Sheena Easton, right?
Well, yeah, that was actually when Ambrosia, on the last album we did, full album that we did for Warner Brothers,
mm-hmm.
Rhode Island, it didn't do very well commercially. We tried to go back to some of our more artsy styles, and they didn't like that. They wanted to go back to some of the other things, and we wanted to try to go back to some of our early artsy stuff. And we still had some songs that we released that were pop songs, but they didn't really promote them as much, and it just sort of withered. And about that time, the band kind of went separate ways. So the band was on hiatus for a couple of years, and during that time, I've been in this band since high school, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the band I started out of high school, or joined it, my first original band out of high school, one by one, the band I joined, people left, and I brought in Dave Pack, brought in Burley Drummond and Chris North, and that became Ambrosia. One band evolved into this.
Wow.
It became Ambrosia. But that was right out of high school. So basically, this is all I had known. And so I was, what am I going to do? Suddenly there's no income coming in. Band's broken up. We're not touring. The record company is we're zeroed out at. We're not making any money from them. It was like, really? And I got a call from Sheena Easton's management here, and they were looking for an American band because she was didn't want to keep bringing over her English band. It was too expensive. They wanted an American-based band.
Right.
And so I took the job for, playing bass, and then they needed a keyboard player who could sing. And I said, well, I have a friend, Bruce Hornsby.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce and I, while we were trying to get a deal in America to make a living, we were playing in Sheena Easton's band.
Wow.
And we're actually in two of her videos, I think. We're in Strut and Sugar Walls.
Mm-hmm.
They made two videos while we were in her band.
Right.
And if you see those old videos on MTV or wherever they are today, you'll see Bruce and I.
that this was before...
Bruce has shades on and I have a mustache. We're disguising ourselves.
Well, was this before For Your Eyes Only, before the Bond theme?
No, this was after For Your Eyes
Only. Oh, okay. Did you get to play that song?
did we what?
Did you get to play that song?
Live?
Yeah, live, I guess.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So we played all of her hits, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
It was a fun day. She's a great singer, by the way. She's actually... Working with her, I was very, very impressed with her vocal abilities.
Mm-hmm.
She had an amazing singing voice. Yeah, she really could just nail it every night after night.
And another thing you did, which I did not know, Poor Rich Boy from Arthur, which was that was a composition by who was it? I'm losing it now.
It's actually one of my other, as far as having a co-write, it's with Burt Bacharach.
Burt Bacharach, yeah, exactly.
He's one of the greatest songwriters of all time. And to say, yes, I have a co-write with Kurt Vonnegut and Burt Bacharach.
Hey, you've done pretty well.
Not too shabby. If I could get Paul McCartney in there, I'd
That's next.
That might not happen. But so the way that one happened, it's kind of a sad story in a way, because there's a part to it that people may not know.
Okay.
We were on tour, and the A&R guy from Warner Brothers came to us with a little cassette of a song that the company thought would be really good for us. And the song was called "When You Get Lost Between the Moon and New York City."
Yeah.
And they wanted us to do it. And I think it was Dave said, "That sounds too much like Killing Me Softly. I don't think you want to do it." I think that could be a hit. But I was overruled.
Oh, no.
So.
Oh, no.
It turned out they ended up, of course, Christopher Cross.
Yeah.
Had the huge hit with an Academy Award when he saw all this stuff.
Yeah.
But they actually offered it to us. But as a sort of a consolation prize, because we were kind of on the label that was going to put out the soundtrack, they asked us if we could find some what they called source music.
Mm-hmm.
That would they played the movie, and it didn't have any of the songs in it yet, but there was scenes where I think Arthur was driving along, and there was a little theme that Burt Bacharach had written.
Right.
And one of them went dum 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 dum
exactly.
dum dum dum, some little theme like that.
Yep.
So they said grab a piece of his music and create a song from it. So that little dum 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 dum, about your old rich boy, I got you. I came up with the idea for Poor Rich Boy. And We developed that song from the original theme that I had come up with from Bacharach's theme.
Wow.
So we have that song on the soundtrack, and that was it's a really fun song. Actually, it's one of the ones that I'd almost like to pull that back in the concert, because it's a very upbeat kind of unique song.
Yeah, you should. I mean, Arthur was one of my favorite movies of all time. That was a great movie.
Yeah. It is a great movie. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to be part of that. Yeah.
Well, when I was in radio, one of the songs I played over and over again was the Robert John Sad Eyes song, and I see you guys did that as well.
You know what? That's one of the things that happens. I think when people mistake people for doing a song, because we've been credited with about three or four songs that we did not do. That's one of them.
Is that one of them,
people
really?
Actually, come to our concert and they say, "Why didn't you do Sad Eyes?" Because somehow it says somewhere that Ambrosia did
it. Does
right?
It
is
does.
That what you're getting that from?
Yeah, it says that you guys did it. I mean, I know Robert John wrote it, but I know it says you guys did the cover.
No, did not. That's what they call fake news. Today,
fake news.
Right?
There you go. There's a good example of it.
It's somehow, you know, that's the thing about the internet.
Yeah.
You're gonna have people's impressions sometimes, not facts, be put out there. And this is one of them that we get credit with. what's the song? There's about three or four songs. "Waiting for a Girl Like You."
Yeah.
One that formed her. People put that one to us.
Yep.
And the one by Timothy Schmidt. I can't tell you why.
That's right, the Eagles.
I can't tell you why, is that it?
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of why I'm here on the phone, but it's like, I can't tell you why. "Waiting for a Girl Like You," Sad Eyes. We get credit for "Baby Come Back Sometimes."
Well, that I can
it's
see.
Funny because we play that now when we do these package shows where we have Peter Beckett play with us. And, Al Stewart, different people who will join us. John Forcoli, of course.
Right.
And Stephen Bishop. All these guys became our friends because we do shows where we're the band and these guys come in and sing with us. But we'll play with them, and it's kind of fun for us to do all these other great songs, you know, on and on with Stephen Bishop. And, you know, "Really Love to See You" and I, with Uncle Coley, "Baby Come Back." It becomes a big hit package show. And that's been very, you know, very successful for us with this, especially with this surge in the whole yacht rock phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's become a real phenomenon right now.
Well, the package shows are the best. You know, I mean, you had Ringo's All-Star Band, you have Happy Together, Hippie Fest. I mean, I love all those. I cover all those shows here in Tampa every time they come by.
No, we love doing those shows, yeah. And it brings out a whole, you know, of course, the strength in numbers. We get a lot more fans at the shows,
right.
and it's a good mix for us because we do our own shows where we just do our own, basically our own music, and then we'll do these shows where we get to back everybody. So it keeps us kind of, I think, having, you know, so you just don't get burnt out on your own stuff. You get to play all these other people's music, and it's broken up, so it keeps it, the music, I think, fresher.
Yep, I agree. I had British director Tony Palmer on my show, and he re-released, you know, that World War II Beatles, the documentary.
Yes.
And you guys
all
put out
World War II.
Yeah, you guys did Magical Mystery Tour. All this in World War II, right?
That was an amazing experience too. It was, we banged that song out. We came up with our own arrangement with it.
I've got the video. It's great.
Of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I got the video. It's wonderful. I love it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that did nothing, but the soundtrack has so many amazing artists on it. Elton John and Rod Stewart, the Bee Gees, you know, Peter Gabriel, Leo Sayer. I mean, it was a fantastic cast that they put together to do all these songs. And it's an amazing album. It really is. I love Leo Sayer's version of Long and Winding Road. The Bee Gees with all their harmonies took over some of the great harmony songs of the Beatles, and our song, we took some, you know, artistic changes that we did to the song. It's really one of our fun songs. We still like to do it live every night too. It's a great song.
Hey, have you seen the video?
I have seen parts of it, but to tell you the truth, it's kind of hard to find. I've seen a little bit of it on online, and I don't think it's the quality is pretty terrible. Do you have a good copy?
I do. I can find a copy for you if you want. Well, it's so cool because it's very good at describing history and the war and everything, along with the music. And my my son-in-law is a history teacher, so I gave it to him to show his class. You know, like the Fool on the Hill, Hitler comes up. You know, it's really cool the way he did that.
That, I think, was the dream that inspired the movie.
Yeah.
Russ Regan, again, bring his name up, because he's the one who signed Alan Parsons.
Right.
He had a dream one night, I think, where he saw Hitler up in his, he had a place up in the mountains with a big veranda overlooking the valley and stuff like that, and he saw Hitler looking out over this valley, and the song, Fool on the Hill, was in the dream along with Hitler.
Huh.
And he came up with this idea to do a documentary about World War II with nothing but Beatles music. And obviously, Magical Mystery Tour, I guess, is opening the whole, by the beginning of the war. And it's a, kind of a crazy, I don't call it Magical Mystery Tour, but it sort of fits. And then they just keep finding songs that I have to watch it again, so it's been a while since I've seen it, but the copy I saw at the time, I just found out we do have a copy here, and I'm going to go now to look at it.
Yeah, I was going to send you mine if you didn't
have a copy.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, you got to see it. I mean, it depicts the war, you know, where it's enjoyable to watch history, you know? They should do a lot more, like, documentaries and things like that for kids. So they would enjoy it more, I guess, you know.
You said somebody's coming out with it again.
He re-released it recently. This was maybe a year or a couple of years ago, and that's when I had him on the show, and I was promoting it for him.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they came out with it again. He was trying to, you know, maybe it didn't sell very well the first time, but he
the movie didn't do well at all.
Yeah.
The soundtrack, I think, in England went gold.
Right.
It did pretty well. Of course, with that kind of cast, you would think it would go.
Yeah.
Something like that. Elton John, Rod Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. But we were pushing the video.
And Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Elton John, Rod Stewart, and the Bee Gees on one album.
It's incredible.
Throw everybody else in there just for decoration. You just, those three alone, you'd think would sell a million copies.
Exactly. I wanted to talk about, I think it was 2012, you added Mary Harris, which is really cool. She's got quite a background there, doesn't she?
She does. Her gig for many, many years was with Jimmy Buffett. And she arranged a lot of on their albums. She arranged the vocals for the album, the live album.
Right.
She also had her own group before that. But she's been married to Burley, our drummer, for over 30 years, 35 years now, I think.
Wow.
And when we needed a replacement for, we had a guy named Rick Cowan playing with us and singing with us, and he couldn't do the touring anymore. Mary stepped in and took over the keyboards and the vocals, and she's been doing a great job. And along with Mary, who's been with us many years, you mentioned Doug Jackson, who Doug Jackson was brought into the band when we had a few different replacements for the, I call them the co-lead vocalists, because I still sing lead vocals,
right,
as well as currently a guy named Ken Stacey, who his background was, he was worked with Elton John. He was also in the movie, because he was going to be on the last tour that Michael Jackson was doing, the This Is It tour, whatever it was called.
Sure.
Of course, when Michael died, everything changed overnight. And then he went on to be a judge and also, a pre-judge and a vocal trainer for American Idol for a while. And then he joined our band again, because he'd been with us, went to do the Michael Jackson thing, and he's back with us now. But prior to Ken being our extra vocalist, our other lead vocalist, we had a guy named Shem Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
And Shem has done many, many things. He's an incredible multi-instrumentalist. And his last job, he was picked to be in Toto. And so he's at that level where he could just pretty much play with anybody. And we were lucky to have him for several years.
Yeah.
But Doug was brought in by Shem. I guess that's where I was getting to. These different people that we've had in our band. And when we needed a guitarist, and then they had recommendations, and Doug was one of the guys that Shem brought in the band.
All right, here's the big question. When's Ambrosia going to come out with another album?
Well, you know, we've been, during this off time, one of the things we've been doing is going through our catalog of songs that nearly made it on the record.
Right.
And that were really good songs. A lot of them are really good songs. And then songs that we started working on post the Ambrosia separation. We started getting back together again for a while. And there's a lot of songs there. So we're kicking that around loosely. It's kind of like we're trying to see, first of all, if we can get a label that would be interested in funding the cost for, you know, going back in the studio to finish everything up, because they're not completed songs. They're demos of ideas, but there's a lot of good, great ideas there. And I would hope that we could get something out maybe by next year with this time off where we have to look over everything and see what we have.
That would be wonderful. I mean, you know, definitely the fans are going to, they always ask, you know, when's Ambrosia coming out with another album? And they're all ready. We're all ready for it.
We'll try to put that together.
Oh yeah! By the way, you need another hit on the top 40 radio today. Let's see if you can do that.
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, it's easier said than done. I mean, I listened to top 40 today a little bit.
It's different,
but there's not a lot that really, you know,
I agree
out to me. You
it's
know,
not the same.
Not a lot of songs that I really hear anymore.
No,
it's sad. The contemporary style has changed in so many ways.
Yep.
From the
Sure.
You know, the recordings and the songwriting has, it's gotten a lot, it's a lot simpler in a lot of ways. I mean, they were pretty sophisticated songs, you know, that written by groups like, certainly like Steely Dan, and
right.
You think of some of the songs like by the Doobies, even our stuff, like songs like Biggest Part of Me, even though it's a R&B tune, which is usually a little bit more simple. There's all these harmony parts and solos and stuff. The songs today are kind of like, you know, it's just, they're put together a lot differently because they're not done by groups in a room,
right,
working together to hammer out a song and an arrangement. Some of the guys sitting in a, you know, bedroom with a computer, and
yep,
and then he sends a file off to somebody else in a room with a computer, and they come up with six people writing this song together that's kind of put together with you know, a lot of stuff that's not really very innovative.
Yeah.
It works, but it's, you know, and sonically they you know, they're impressive because you have all these incredible sounds that you can draw on from, you know, through the world we live in with synthesizers and stuff, but it's not the same kind of approach to getting sounds when it was all organic, when a guitarist had to come up with a sound of,
right,
out of an amp, or, you know, the sound you had to get, even for sound effects, you had to go out and, when we did some of the stuff where we needed sound effects, we had to go out in the woods with a little Nagra tape recorder,
mm-hmm,
and record streams and lightning, whatever you needed, you know, trash cans being hit with a sledgehammer, whatever you wanted for sonic, you created it, and it was fun.
Yeah.
But now you can just go online and go, I need a trash can being hit by a sledgehammer. Go online, somebody's got that sound, you can download.
Yeah.
It's a different world.
It's
lost some of that magic that was created by the search and discovery,
yeah,
of things you could do. You know, and I think because of that, I think people miss a little of that organic approach to making music.
Well, I do for sure.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
There's one. There's more of you, I'm sure, than
that. Do you still talk to David?
We've been getting ideas together, you know, over the last year and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, you know, there's still issues that we have to work out,
right,
you know, technically. It's a touchy subject, so I don't want to go into it too much. But,
right,
but we've been trying to figure out some ways we could maybe put things together.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. I mean, that would be a hell of an album if he came back. Brand new album, you know. Both of you kind of blend in well together too, as far as your voices. So, but you can handle it on your own. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. Well, we're trying to figure that out. You know, no
okay
promises, so we'll see.
That'll be great. Do you have a studio? Don't you? Do you still have that?
Is I do.
The Exchange.
Yes, I do. Many years ago, I moved to Milwaukee.
Right.
And there was a studio that had been one of the early studios that was created in Milwaukee, like in the 70s, that had really kind of fallen into disrepair. But one of the things that kind of intrigued me about it, that the history of it, David Bowie, when he was touring America, did a lot of his demos and overdubs for his live album and everything from this studio that was there.
Oh, really?
And I thought, well, that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Place in Milwaukee that Bowie worked out of.
Huh.
And so anyway, myself and my engineer that I worked with, mm-hmm, for many years, Kevin Arndt, went into this place, and it was a wreck. But I kind of saw, I said, you know, I like the Bones. I think this could be really created again, you know, recreated.
Sure.
And so we went back in and we spent like a year cleaning it up and rewiring things and putting in new floors and changing, but, you know, taking what was there and then just refining it and cleaning it up, and it's a really very nice studio right now, and I've done some stuff out of it there myself, but most of the time, it's since I live in California, it's just groups out of Milwaukee that,
mm-hmm,
I did a Christmas song there that was a while ago that was became a actually it was the number one Christmas song in the country for a while that I wrote with a friend of mine. Actually, he wrote the song and I recorded it there with some friends, and it's called "I'm Coming Home for Christmas." And he wrote it as a tribute, I think, to the troops who were at the time being stationed over in Iraq and stuff like that.
Joe, here's your final question. I ask everybody this question. I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
To collaborate with one person or anybody?
Yeah, or if you have a couple, you know, if you want to put a band together, that's fine.
Well, like I said earlier, I've got a co-write with Vonnegut, right. Bacharach, it'd be Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
If I could have a Paul McCartney co-write, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, it's never too late. I'll put a call in to Paul and let him know, okay?
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I can see that happening. Joe, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Ray.
After all this is over, you know, I look forward to you guys coming to Florida again. You know, stay well, you know, stay home.
That's basically that's the drill these days.
Yep.
So we're basically doing that, and we're like I said, fortunately we have enough to do here. We're not going stir crazy.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've got a lot to do here.
I'll promote the extended versions live album. Okay. We'll go ahead and promote that album for you as well. And
sounds good.
Yep.
And play Poor Rich Boy.
Okay, we sure will. I'll make sure we put that on. You know, I'm on iHeartRadio and YouTube and iTunes, and we're everywhere. So we can post as many videos as we want. So we'll put them all on there.
Sounds great.
All right, Joe.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. Bye bye now. Purchase Ambrosia's extended versions live at Amazon.com. For more information about Joe Puerta and Ambrosia, visit www.ambrosialive.net/theband. That's the official website. Facebook, www.facebook.com/AmbrosiaTheBand. Very special thanks to John Lappin Enterprises for arranging this interview with Joe Puerta. And the dynamic duo, of course, of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. My new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. Truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us all free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Thank you so much. Stay safe and have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.